Hello, and welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, away with the fairies, girls versus supernatural queens.
Now, we've discussed similar, we've touched on this topic before, but Jules and I realised that we hadn't actually really focused on it, and it is quite a big subject, so we felt that it warranted its own episode.
Yeah, definitely. And there has been a slight upswing in popularity in what you'd probably call Tamlin retellings. The basic premise is girl's lover gets abducted by a fairy queen, and girl goes to great lengths to get him back. Sometimes it's her fault that he gets abducted, and sometimes it's not. And the thing is, this trope actually goes back, that we can follow it, about 900 years. And it might even go back further than that for all we know, but we can certainly follow it in folk song back 500 years, and then snippets in folklore, sort of another sort of 300-400 years on top of that.
Yeah, it is interesting because the whole premise of a supernatural being stealing a lover away and someone going to, you know, to another world to get them back. I mean, that's ancient. Well, you only have to look at basic sort of Greek mythology, and you get examples of that happening. Particularly Hades or people dying and others venturing into the underworld to try and get their lovers back. I mean, Dionysus ventures into the underworld to get his mother back and things like that. But interestingly enough, especially in the Greek mythos, it tended to be males trying to get females back, whether they were lovers or parents or things like that. But as we go forward, and I think particularly because it was influenced by Tamlin, we get that nice reversal where it's about female heroines stepping forward to save their lovers. And I'm rather fond of that.
Yes, as a fairy tale, as a folk tale, I've always liked it because it's one of the few where you see the female character, often with an actual name, which is almost unheard of,
Gasp.
and I know, and with some agency of her own. It's kind of like, no, I'm not taking this lying down. Steal my boyfriend, thank you very much.
Yeah.
And sometimes there's an unsavory reason for it, which, we'll get into a bit later, but sometimes it's just simply a case of no, I actually have willpower and grit and determination of my own, and you're not getting away with it. And it's a theme that turns up in lots of fairy tales and obviously myths, as you've said. I mean, there's Orpheus and Eurydice, Demeter going into the underworld to try and get Persephone back, which mixed results, to be honest. She doesn't really go through trials so much as there's the whole myth about the seasons, depending on which version you read. And as you say about Dionysus as well. So the whole idea of almost, I mean, I suppose the thing is that the other world, Hybrasel, was actually once considered almost synonymously with the plains of the dead in Celtic mythology. You crossed one to get to another. They didn't make a huge division between the lands of death and the lands of the other world creatures. So the whole idea of, literally walking through hell to get somebody back, different sort of hell, not Christian hell, is an enduring theme. The premise of Tamlin. Let's start with Tamlin because that's probably an easy place to start.
Let's we'll start with Tamlin, but make sure remind me obviously to talk about Balder as well.
Yes.
I suspect that you were going to already. But yes, okay, so let's start with Tamlin. So Tamlin is actually an epic poem, isn't it?
Yes, which has been set to music and adapted into one of the child ballads, and it's been rewritten and reused so many different times, both in mythology and also in modern books and films and things. It's amazing how much it comes up, and it has components and corresponding myths in other parts of European mythology as well, which is also interesting. But the premise is that Janet is the daughter of a lord, and she's warned not to go to Quarterhaye because young Tamlin is there. Young Tamlin was abducted by the Fairy Queen some time ago for nefarious reasons belonging to the Fairy Queen. And Janet being Janet's kind of like, well, I'm going to go to quarter hay then because I need to know what that's about. That sounds like the place to be. She meets Tam Lin when she's picking roses, and he tells her off for picking these roses. I think we can all see beyond the symbolism here.
Yeah.
Picking a rose, pricking your fingers. I wonder what that's all about. Anyway, the warning they give to young girls about going to quarter hay is that you will have to leave something precious behind, you know, either your rings, your necklace, or your maidenhead.
Yeah.
So it's already a little bit unsavoury.
Yeah.
As far as we can tell from that original sort of epic poem that became a ballad, Janet actually isn't too fussed about leaving her maidenhead behind. She's fine with it. You kind of get the impression that she's bored of her father's ideas of suitors for her, and she's gone out looking for one of her own.
Yeah.
So she and Tam Lin become lovers. Nobody can keep Janet on a leash. She's not interested in that at all. And then Tam Lin finally confesses that it's coming up towards Halloween, and on Halloween, every 7 years, the Fairy Queen pays a tithe to Hell, which is a sacrifice of a likely young mortal that she has abducted, groomed, if you like, and made her own lover. And he said that there's literally only one way for someone to save him, and that is for a woman who genuinely loves him to pull him down off the white horse he will be riding on All Hallows Eve and hold on to him no matter what. And the thing is, trying to take anything from the fairies doesn't tend to go well for most people. There's countless stories which aren't as popular about things that happen to people who try to take stuff from the fairies.
Yeah.
So Janet does exactly as she says, pulls him down off his horse. The Fairy Queen's like, no, you can't have him. And Janet's like, no, this one's mine. He's the father of my child, because, by the way, she's got pregnant. And the Fairy Queen's like, okay, well, if you want him, you hold on to him, and proceeds to go through changing him into various different creatures that Janet just has to hold on to, right up until the end when the Fairy Queen turns him into a burning coal. Janet throws him into the well, as she's been instructed, and he emerges a naked man. And Janet covers him with her own kirtle, and he's hers again. But there's something funny about that particular poem, because at the end of it, the Fairy Queen faces Janet, and she doesn't quite...
I mean, there's several funny things about that poem.
There really is. But this is weird and a little bit creepy. The Fairy Queen just sort of turns and says to Janet... She doesn't really curse her, but she says... The words she says are kind of a bit elliptical, and it suggests that either she will come back, as in she will come back at some point in the future for Janet's own child, or that she, the Fairy Queen, will have to sacrifice one of her own people. But because basically the tithe has to be paid one way or another. But yes, you're quite right. It's that in some ways it's quite an unsavoury poem.
But it is actually... To be honest, a lot of the old original mythos, they are quite unsavoury. But I like Tam Lin because, as you say, Janet has a lot of agency.
Yeah.
Whilst there is a very obvious and sexual component there, it's not an unwilling component.
No.
Janet is still very much the master of her own fate here. And she goes through these trials. And makes it through. And there is, I mean, the symbolism between, you know, emerging from a well, you know, completely naked, the sort of the whole rebirth kind of thing, the whole baptized sort of thing, and then being clothed by her. It's quite nice because it's a bit of a reversal of what is typically, of the typical symbolism that you see with marriage, you know, which is that a man takes it, whereas very much in this sense it's Janet taking Tam Lin.
Yeah, she
and I like that.
I mean, it's interesting because she actually says to her father, no, I know who I want for my husband, I'm going to go out and get him. She literally says, I'm going to go out and get him. And the whole idea of the bit from emerging from the well, he said there he emerged a mother naked man, you know, literally as if he'd just been born, as you said. And she brings him under her protection. So she is literally taking him away from a much, much more powerful supernatural being.
Yeah, and clothing him, taking ownership of him. I just love the symbolism, of course, and because yeah, the two most powerful the two most powerful beings in the poem are Janet and the Fairy Queen, and they're
Yeah.
both women. I really, really like it. There's just a lot you can do with it.
And of course, the
I feel
whole
just sort of a little bit sorry for Tamlin as well, the whole situation. Like, yeah, I'm gonna get sacrificed. Do you love me? Could you save me, please?
they're going to feed me into hell. It's going to be really horrible. How do you feel about marrying me? Oh, it has to be an unusual
We're having a
pagan
child,
ceremony.
Tamlin, so.
Yeah, I mean, there is an argument to say that she had absolutely no choice but to go and get him or marry somebody else because she was pregnant and needed a father for her child. But I think
Yeah.
for someone who went out and did what she wanted to do no matter what, I think that if she hadn't have wanted him, she wouldn't have pulled him down off that horse.
Yeah.
Ultimately, she'd have chosen just to
Yeah.
either marry someone else she wanted or to have the child by
I
herself
just
and
think, yeah, it was a lot of effort to
well,
hold on to him throughout, because
the thing is,
he transformed into some weird creatures, doesn't he?
yeah, like a giant spider, something like a crocodile, a wolf. I mean, I'd have been screwed if he'd turned into a giant slug, to be honest. Just been like, okay, I'm sorry, honey, I've tried.
Off to hell you go. Yeah, so yeah, she and I mean there are some versions as well where she's literally put through torture as well.
Yeah.
And she holds on, and it's a real part of her conviction. So yeah, this is definitely the story of someone who knows their own mind and knows what they want the whole way through, and is willing to fight for it. And actually, usually fairy stories where someone messes with the fae, or the supernatural beings, it doesn't end well for them. It
No.
doesn't end well for Eurydice, or Eurydice, because there's doubt, and so what's his face looks around, and so she's cast back into the underworld. It doesn't end well with Balder. It doesn't really end well with any of the stories where it's a man trying to save a woman. But the other way around,
Yeah, I suppose
there's
that.
success.
And that's the thing, isn't it? You need an act of faith in order to take your loved one back from the fairy folk. That's usually the common theme. Anyway, tell us about Balder.
So let's talk about Balder. So we've mentioned Greek mythology, but we actually have in Norse mythology an example of a god who is killed and ends up on the right side of hell. Hela, or hell being not the place, but the goddess of death,
Yeah.
Loki's daughter. Now, general premise before we get into Balder. Balder was made immune by Frigga. Frigga basically, Balder was the beloved son of Asgard. Everyone loved Balder.
He was the most
And
beautiful.
yeah, he was Balder the Beautiful, and he was just, people just adored him. And Frigga got very concerned that anything might happen to him, so she went around the world and made every object and the spirit of every animal and person promise never ever to harm Balder. And she missed one thing out, and that I believe it was mistletoe.
It was.
And she missed mistletoe out because in some versions she got distracted, in other versions it was because she deemed mistletoe too young to make such an eternal promise. And there's different versions of this. Usually it's Loki's fault. Loki goes, right, this is a bit much, guys. You can't just make someone immortal like that. It completely disrupts the balance, and he doesn't like Balder very much anyway, probably because everyone else does. And he passes, he makes a dart out of mistletoe, and versions have it that he gives it to Holder or something like that.
Yeah, his Balder's brother, basically.
Yeah, Balder's brother. So also, Balder is Thor's brother, and Hodar or something is another one, but he's blind. Now, what's happening is that at a party, everyone is having great amusement throwing things at Balder because none of them will hurt him. So they're throwing knives, they're throwing axes, and Balder's just standing there, and everyone's having a really great time. And Hodar throws this dart, and it hits Balder, punctures his lung, and kills him. At which point, all the Asgardians freak out a little bit and they kill Hodar, which is a bit unfair, really, realistically.
Well, yeah.
But hey ho, the Asgardians aren't exactly known for being fair. So Frigga is absolutely broken-hearted, and she goes across the realms. I should mention, by the way, that Hela in some versions was actually kind of in love with Balder, so she's super happy that he's down in hell with her,
Yeah.
down in the underworld with her, as on her right-hand side. But she makes a promise to Frigga, that if every being in the world weeps for Balder, he can come back to life.
Yeah.
And once again, every being in the world, bar one,
Who could that be?
weeps for Balder. And it's an old crone, but everyone's like, it's clearly Loki in
It's clo
disguise.
it's Loki. Loki
It's
disguising himself
Loki.
as Ifrit.
Yeah.
It's like, are you really a crone?
Yes, shut up. And he makes points, so why should I cry for Balder? Well, no one is crying for my lost children. No one is crying for, why should I cry for Balder? And so Balder stays dead. But this is it's one of the early examples of a woman trying to save a man from death or from supernatural forces. But in this case, obviously, it doesn't work out. And for me, it's a little bit different because unlike with Tamlin, there wasn't an evil supernatural force at play. In fact, Balder died because his mother was messing around with supernatural forces and the natural order of things.
Yes.
Like, he literally wouldn't have been killed by that dart if they hadn't all been playing that game where they were trying to
It's like, yeah, why would you do that? Why would you be so terrified that someone might die that you then extract promises from everything in the world, and then you're like, okay, he's good now. He's basically invulnerable. So let's play a game of throwing the axe at him. I mean,
Yeah.
it's insane, isn't it? But, you
Yeah,
know,
it is.
that's the Asgardians for you.
Just the Asgardian way. But it. Yeah, it is also funny, of course, because in according to Asgardian lore, you only get into Valhalla if you die in battle. So I
Yeah.
don't know what Balder was supposed to do. He literally couldn't die in battle because nothing could kill him. He would have just died of old age. It would have been really miserable. So actually, Loki, technically, he does die in battle of some kind because he gets killed. Killed by offensive weaponry. So actually Loki does a good thing. And I we're not talking about Loki obviously this episode, but it's just the whole kind of actually it's a story about the restoring the natural balance and not playing with things which are so much bigger than you. Whereas of course actually when it comes to Tamlin, and the other retrieval stories, Tamlin is particularly different because it's not actually about someone trying to go against the natural order of things like it is with Eurydice, where she dies naturally. It's tragic, but she dies naturally. Whereas obviously with Tamlin, he's being abducted.
Yeah.
It's a supernatural force at play which is causing a problem which can then be prevented. So it is interesting how, yeah, you have the general message is a little bit different. And for a lot of the earlier myth, the general message is you can't mess with life and death. Life and death are the way of things. Whereas with Tamlin, it's actually if you love something enough, you can overcome all trials.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it is that idea of someone who is not supernatural going up against something that massively outweighs them on the power scale. Because let's face it, Janet
Yeah.
doesn't have any skills or anything, except that she's quite brave. She is just a human. She's not an immortal being full of great and awesome power like the Fairy Queen is. And
Yeah.
it is a theme that comes up again in other fairy tales and other myths and things. So, I mean, there's East of the Sun, West of the Moon, which is an old Norwegian fairy tale, sort of Beauty and the Beast meets Tamlin.
Yeah.
Like all Beauty and the Beast fairy tales, it has some unsavory parts. What happens is that the girl in East of the Sun, West of the Moon, Ever Neve, is a bit of an adventurer, and one day a white her family falls on hard times, and one day a white bear comes down from the north and says to her family, "I will make all your financial problems go away if you give me your youngest daughter." And she says, "Actually, I'm kind of okay with this because I'm bored of being here." I'm paraphrasing slightly. But she goes away with the white bear into the far north. And she's told that for a year and a day she has to live with the white bear. And when she goes to bed at night, she's not to light a candle. That's it. She's not allowed to light a candle at all. Now,
But she goes and does it anyway,
well, girls
after
and
they
fairy
become
tales.
lovers, I guess.
Well, no, they don't really. What? Well, not. It's not explicit, put it that way. She lives with a white bear. She grows to be very fond of the white bear, but she's incredibly creeped out by the person who comes and gets into the huge bed with her at night. Doesn't lay a hand on her, doesn't speak to her, but there's another person there getting into bed in pitch black with her. And
Yeah.
after a few months of this, she starts to get very homesick, so the white bear says okay and takes her back to her family for a visit. Ever Neve actually mentions this to her mother, and her mother's a little bit concerned, understandably.
Yeah.
So her mother buys a candle from a witch and a tinder box and sneaks it into her daughter's pack, and her daughter goes back with the white bear. She finds the candle, and we all know what happens then because, you know, being a curious girl, she lights the candle, the one thing she's told not to do, and she sees the most beautiful man she's ever seen, and she realizes it's her white bear, that he's had to spend all his days as a white bear, and at night he's a man. And then the Queen of the Holder, the trolls, turns up and takes him away. And the whole curse has been a case of if you can get a girl to live with you, almost like a wife, for a year and a day, without knowing what you really look like, thinking that you're a bear, then I'll break the spell. If not, you belong to me. Ever Neve cho chooses that moment to realise that she's fallen in love with him.
Of course.
But he's gone, and his palace of ice is melting all around her. It's all really tragic. And then she goes through sort of a all the elements. It's literally almost torture just to get to where the Holder live. And then she disguises herself as one of the slaves because they steal humans as slaves, very much like the Shay. While she's there, she realizes there's going to be a big wedding feast of with three balls, and on the final night, the white bear, who is enchanted and doesn't remember her, will marry
Course.
the Holder Queen. So she spins herself three dresses, one of gold, one of silver, and one of moonlight. And she turns up as a guest on each night, trying to get his attention. And on the third night, she kind of manages to get his attention enough that he goes, "Well, I think that," he sort of thinks, "actually, I don't think I'm in love with this Holder Queen. I think something weird's going on here. I think I actually might like the girl in the moonlight dress,
Smart bear.
but I can't really remember what's happening, and I need to work out who I'm supposed to be with." So he takes a shirt that he has accidentally spilt wine on, and he says, "You know, I'll marry you to the Holder Queen if you can get the stain out of this shirt," which is an amazingly mundane thing to say. And obviously the Queen's kind of like, "I've never washed a shirt in my life, but how hard can it be?" She fails utterly. The girl, Ebba Neve, comes forward and said, "I can do that for you. Will you marry me if I can do it?" He's like, "Yeah, sure." Sort of, almost a sigh of relief there, swiping the sweat off his brow. And she gets the shirt clean, and that's it. The spell's broken. He remembers her. They go back to where her family lived, and it turns out that he was actually a real prince that had been stolen by this Holder queen. So, I mean, I really like that story, but I mean, she certainly creates her own problem in that one. Don't light a
Yeah,
candle.
definitely. I'm gonna light a candle. Well, I mean, I know you don't want to.
You want to talk about? Okay. Try and
Yeah.
make it brief.
Well, okay. Well, first of all, we have to mention A Court of Thorns and Roses, which is obviously, again, it's weird actually how we've had, I think, a few retellings which are basically Tamlin, but also Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
It's like, no, Tamlin apparently isn't good enough. The girl has to be abducted first.
Yeah.
But okay. So yeah, we have the start of A Court of Thorns and Roses begins as Beauty and the Beast retelling. You have Feyre who kills a wolf that, oh gasp, is not a wolf, is actually a fairy in disguise, and has to go into the world of fairy to kind of to balance out according to a scary fairy guy who arrives, scary fairy who arrives at her front door like, you kill murderer, murderer, right, your life belongs to me, I'm taking you to Prithian. And Feyre just goes, okay. Actually, Feyre says, actually, I'd rather you just kill me, but can you do it outside? At which point Tamlin starts to sweat. His name is literally Tamlin, so
Yeah.
you know where that's going. Yeah, he takes her back to his giant mansion. And Feyre as a character, I saw this great summary of A Court of Thorns and Roses on YouTube, which is I'm going to send to you later, Jules, because I
Okay.
think you're really going to love it. And Feyre spends the entire time there causing more problems for herself by doing literally the exact opposite of what she should be doing, including trusting the guy who openly hates her, Lucien. She's like, you openly hate me. Tell me, how can I possibly get away from Tamlin? And Lucien obviously doesn't give her very good advice. And then Lucien says, don't drink the fairy wine. No, first Lucien says, don't go to Calamine to Fire Knight. And she goes and does it anyway. And then don't drink the fairy wine, but she goes and does it anyway. Don't do this, but she goes and does it. Yeah, basically, Feyre is continually creating her own problems, and thus ends up getting into a bit of a scrap. She falls in love with Tamlin, but doesn't tell him that she's in love with him, and gets sent back. And upon arriving home, she immediately goes, "Nah, I'm gonna go back to Tamlin." But it's too late. He's been kidnapped. He's gone under the mountain by the evil fairy queen Amarantha. And basically, from there, it's Tamlin, and she has to go under the mountain and perform these different tasks. But they didn't go with the whole kind of changing him into different animals things. Instead, they went for something a little bit more extreme.
Yeah.
Like, she's basically put in the equivalent of a gladiator pit. Go and fight the worm.
Yeah, I mean it is a little bit like that. I suppose on that particular thing, and I honestly wasn't thinking of A Court of Thorns and Roses, I promise you, but I did the same thing. I didn't have in betwixt in between actually just having to hold on. While
Yeah.
someone got shape-shifted in her arms,
Yeah.
I
Yeah, well,
she had to solve a few things.
yeah. No, and I want to talk about Betwixt and Between in more detail in a minute, definitely, because it's a much more it's I feel it's a little bit more faithful to the original Tamlin myth in a lot of ways. But yeah, you kind of focus on different things. But yeah, so, A Court of Thorns and Roses. Interestingly enough, it's the first one is this retelling of Tamlin, but the second one is actually kind of Persephone and Hades retelling, which almost has similar kind of connotations in the supernatural creature kidnaps person, but she
Yeah.
ultimately actually kind of enjoys sticking around.
Yeah, it's tricky that one really, isn't it? 'Cause the original early Persephone myth was that she just decided she wanted to go into hell, see what it was like, and she looked around and went, "Yeah, I like it here. I'm going to set up shop. Hey, Hades." And he's kind of like,
Hades like, oh, I'm in
"Okay."
love.
She actually, no, she announces to Hades, she said, "Yeah, I think I'm going to marry you." And he's like, "Yeah, okay. Whatever you want, Persephone, fine. Can I build you a throne?" kind of thing. And then her mother throws an epic hissy fit.
Hades is actually kind of adorable. They always depict Hades in movies. They're always depicting Hades as kind of evil and dark and cruel and after and like he's just tired, I think, mostly. And he's in love with a flower princess. Like, what's this evil about that? This is a dude who collects rocks. And also everyone's like, well, he's always trying to expand his empire, and I'm like, dude, he's the king of the dead. His empire is literally constantly expanding. Like, it's literally constantly getting bigger because the dead don't go anywhere. He just keeps getting more. Like, he doesn't have to do anything. Everyone will eventually come to him because he's the king of the dead. Like, don't understand.
Exactly. I mean, if you read the myth, he's the least evil of those three brothers.
Yeah,
I mean,
seriously. He's also the only one who doesn't go around raping
I was
people
going to
all the
say, yeah, you've got
time.
Zeus, serial rapist. You've got Poseidon. Oh, I'm having a pissy day. I think I'll cause a lot of earthquakes and kill thousands of people.
And then you have Hades, who just
It's kind of like,
has a dog that's literally called Spot. Okay, Cerberus means spot. All right, this is not an evil dude.
Okay, a slightly more modern, I say modern, it was written by Hans Christian Andersen. Modern by my standards, which means anything written, sort of in 1700s onwards is modern. A girl taking something back from a fairy queen, although she's not specifically called a fairy queen, is the Snow Queen, which
Yes.
I've got a weird love-hate relationship with. I love the actual concept of the Snow Queen. Every time I try and read the fairy tale again, I'm kind of like, I don't like how this has been written. So I'm really sorry, Hans Christian Andersen. Apparently, I have problems with your style.
Is it because he's Christian?
I do think so. No, some of the Christian symbology is very heavy-handed by today's standards. Yes, admittedly, but I don't think that's it. Anyway, in the Snow Queen, the devil, or an evil troll, depending which version you're reading, who personifies the devil, creates a mirror that distorts the truth and reflects the worst things about people back to themselves, and enjoys going around the world showing people that they thought they were good and kind and they're not, and that evil people that actually what they're doing is the right thing to do, and causes a lot of chaos with it. He and his minions find this so funny. They decide to take the mirror up into the heavens to show the angels and God what they're really like. But they're laughing so hard they drop the mirror on the way and it shatters. Yeah, I know. That's just so what would happen, isn't it? It's like, this is going to be the ultimate prank, man. Oh, fuck, there goes the mirror.
Oh
The mirror shatters into millions of pieces, some of which are no bigger than a grain of sand. Anyway, years later, you have Gerda and Kai, who have been, best friends as children. And Gerda is saying goodbye to Kai under a lamppost, and Kai goes, "Oh God, something's in my eye." And Gerda said, "Oh, let me see." She has a look at his eyes, said, "I can't see anything." He says, "No, I don't feel it there anymore. I feel it here." And he puts his hand over his heart, and then Kai starts acting really strangely. And what's happened is he's got a shard of the mirror in his eye, and it's travelled into his heart and made him really cold, and uncaring. And Gerda's really hurt to start with because she can't understand why he keeps rejecting her and being cruel. And then the Snow Queen turns up, and the Snow Queen's got a bit of a proclivity for stealing young men, again, very much like the Shay, and takes Kai on her sleigh and rides off with him to the country of winter where the snowflakes gather thickest. And Gerda has hell of a time getting him back.
Good on you, Gerda.
But she does ultimately do it. She faces down the Queen of Winter. And obviously, you can see that Hans Christian Andersen has actually drawn on a lot of very similar sources to some of these other tales as well. As somebody who has actually kind of used the Queen of Winter herself in books, the Snow Queen reminds me of the Calyx a lot. in many ways, apart from the whole sort of I'm going to abduct young men. That's not something she really does. That's something the other Shay Queens do. So once again, you have that utterly unpowered female character who goes up against a huge supernatural force and wins through a sheer act of faith.
Yeah. Now, talking about sheer acts of faith,
Yes.
let's talk about Betwixt and Between.
Yes.
For those of you who don't know, haven't read it yet, Betwixt and Between is book five
Yeah.
of, I had to count there.
I still have to do that as well, in fairness.
It's like, am I missing out? No, that's a novella. No, that's a side story. That okay, got it. It's book five of the Unveiled series by J.A. Ironside. You might have heard of her. Sorry, it's a bad joke. It's very much kind of based off of Tamlin, but obviously with its own unique kind of twist. And the interesting thing about it in particular is that actually Emmeline, unlike Janet, is not a normal human being. And actually, that makes things worse for her rather than better.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and I do like it because the original story, it is about humans can do this, and Emmeline actually has a harder time of it because she's the literal opposite of a fairy. She stands on the completely other side of the spectrum, because she's the handmaiden of death, and of course, where the fairies live. In Faerie, or the Tuatha De Danann, or sorry, not the Tuatha De Danann, Chernanog. It's the land of eternal living, so nobody dies really. I mean, I think you can get, well, you can get killed, but nobody dies, so death doesn't really have a place there. So you, it's like trying to, mix Lego with what's it called? You know what I
Yeah, Em's at a distinct disadvantage because she is the literal personification of Lord Death in
Yeah.
as a human. You know, she is the avatar of death, and the whole thing, the entire land tries to reject her every second that she's there. It's like, you don't belong here, because the Shay shut out the Calyx and death and dying years and years and years before.
Yeah.
And she needs an extraordinary amount of help just to in order to get in, to get into where Mikaelina is, the queen that nicks Kieran.
Yeah. Now, interestingly enough, for me, that actually personifies one aspect of the Tamlin myth, which you said that it wasn't actually in it, in that you don't have M clinging on to Kieran, physically clinging on to Kieran while he changes. She goes through a different kind of trial.
Yeah.
But for me, the whole clinging on thing, it's representative of, well, holding on,
Yeah, that's true.
despite the hardships. And that's literally what she's doing, because she's holding on in this world, this universe, which is constantly trying to shake her off and constantly trying to reject her. And she's literally grappling with it the entire time. And so I feel that whole trope is actually really represented in her just even being in fairy at all.
Yeah, that's a fair point, and I didn't think about it that way. I know I'm supposed to as the author, but I clearly didn't. So it was there subconsciously. Yeah, and obviously I made it more of a riddle type thing for the trial she has to go through. I mean, you kind of feel sorry for Kieran in that situation as well. It really wasn't his fault that he was there.
It really wasn't his fault. In fact, like he it's I mean, it's not really Emmeline's fault, but it is a little bit more her fault than it is his, to be honest. like Kieran really isn't the one responsible at all. And that's quite nice. And Emmeline is a little bit, but she's not really either. So unlike with a lot of the other retellings, where the female character is actually the one who ultimately result is the one who ban who ends up banishing her lover and then has to save him, and you get that in A Court of Thorns and Roses. You get it in the one you were just telling me about with the polar bear. What's it called?
East of the Sun, West of the Moon.
East of the Sun, West of the Moon. Whereas in this, actually, just like with the original Tamlin, it's two people who love each other, and then this thing happens. Tamlin's like,
Yeah.
"Oh hey, by the way." and that's what happens with Kieran, and I actually kind of prefer that a little bit, because I in some ways it sort of cheapens the deal a little bit for me, which is you wonder actually how much of what they're going through is also comes down to guilt and to
Yeah.
responsibility. And it's not actually necessarily about love completely. Obviously it is about love, but I actually quite like the fact that it's no, I'm here just for him. And it is just for him. And no part of me has rejected him. No part of me is here out of any sense of obligation or duty. It is just for him. And to me, that really brings out the whole theme of the act of faith, which is that if there is a level of responsibility attached to performing these tasks and saving somebody, there's already kind of, in magical laws, an in, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because you know, that the fairies in particular, it's all kind of about equivalence and equivalent exchange. So if there is, you know, something like that, then the doorway is already open. Whereas if it is just about I'm taking this risk for my love, there's a lot more uncertainty attached. The whole situation is a lot more volatile, and the whole leap of faith thing really comes into it a little bit more. And I like that. I just think it's refreshing and nice to see that being brought forward again.
Yeah, it was something that was something obviously I really wanted to play up, but also I always wondered, just sort of what exactly are you doing, Tamlin, while Janet's defying her father and running after you and coming out at Halloween and facing down the Fairy Queen? What are you doing to free yourself? And I
Sorry,
know.
it's just like, what are you doing, Tamlin? Just shot of him lying on a bed being fed grapes. Just
Well, yeah, but I mean, I suppose that's kind of what I originally, okay, Betwixt and Between was going to be a short story. Ha! Ha! And then it was going to be a novella, and Madeline mocked me and mocked me. I'm like, no, it's a novella. Okay, it's a 60,000 word novella.
like, it's a novella, it's a novella, it's going to be a book, it's a novella. And then I just got this defeated message saying, "So it's a book." Like I was supposed to be surprised.
Yeah, understandably. It was too much story. And part of that was I never intended to have a dual point of view. So I never intended to tell it from Em's and Kieran's point of view, which I did in the end. And the reason for that was they're apart for a good chunk of the book. And I wanted to look at what was happening to Kieran. What exactly was he doing? What was his struggle in against the supernatural? Because he has even less power than Em in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And
So he gets a bit of a power, sorry, spoilers, but he gets a bit of a power up.
He does level. He levels up. He
Yeah,
levels
he
up.
levels up, he upgrades. I'm
But
not
no.
as useless as I was
But nobody knows exactly how much of that's going to stay. But well. Anyway, I don't want to spoilify anything
I
else.
know.
But yeah, and I suppose the whole thing is being abducted by a fairy queen isn't a whole barrel of laughs, particularly. I've gone a lot into the myth of Kleina and also Evil as well, and neither of them are particularly good people to get abducted by.
No.
I mean, I'd pick Evil over Kleina, but it's a close thing.
They are not nice people. Just put that out there.
So, yeah, I wouldn't say that I was deliberately trying to set out to say, oh, yeah, no, Kieran's totally suffering really badly. This isn't a case of, oh, the beautiful woman's abducted me. Oh, no.
Yeah, I think actually that also adds a different meaning to it as well, which is that in A Court of Thorns and Roses, actually, despite the fact that Feyre really loves Tamlin to the point that she does go through all of these trials for him, and he really loves her. I think it's important to make that distinction. He is very much in love with her. Their relationship, spoiler, does fall apart in the second book for various reasons, mostly because they're both really suffering from post-traumatic stress and neither of them are actually dealing with it particularly well. And Tamlin kind of is a bit of a dick about it. You know, one of the big main things is that a lot of criticism that people have for Tamlin is that he just didn't seem to do anything whilst Feyre was going through these different tasks.
No, he loves her quite selfishly, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. And on the one side, I would be really interested to see things from his point of view and to actually see what he was going through at the time and how much restraint was there and what he was thinking, because we don't see it from his point of view. And obviously, we do get the perspective from Rhys's point of view, not because we see Rhys's point of view, but because we hear about it. He gets to speak about it. And Tamlin doesn't get the chance to defend himself or to give another perspective, which is a little bit unfair. But I guess that's kind of the whole point, is that you're meant to think the worst of him so that Rhys looks better, which you really didn't have to do.
Yeah.
like, really didn't have to do. So, you know, it doesn't actually take that much, if you really think about it, to imagine what Tamlin was going through during that time. And to understand why, when he did get Feyre alone, he kissed her rather than trying to run away with her. And at this point, this might be someone who feels that they're completely and utterly doomed. I don't know. That there's all sorts of ways that you could read it, but you don't get the perspective. But obviously in Betwixt and Between, we do. And what's going on with Kieran in Betwixt and Between is that he becomes a character called Connor.
Yeah, Connell.
Connell, rather.
That's it,
Connell,
Hound.
It's his surname, yeah. Sorry. I'm, sorry, I got confused there. Yeah, Connell. And he has a whole new identity given to him, in which he feels he's always been there. He's always been with the Queen. He's in love with her. And yet he can't shake this distinct feeling that something's definitely not right about all of this. And his position, despite the fact that he's being honoured, is very uncomfortable and very uncertain. Like, he does almost get raped. spoiler alert, but yeah, he does almost get raped. And Jules, you know, only had it a little bit, but I insisted we went full out. I was like, yeah, no, make it really obvious.
It's like she sends me a message saying, I think you need to hurt Kieran. I'm like, dude, he just nearly got raped. You're like, not nearly enough. Oh my god, but I went back and looked at it, and yeah, there is an element of you, if you're going to put something like that in, then you have to be a bit faithful to it.
Yeah.
And I hadn't deliberately tried to minimise it, but it's a case of, okay, there's a couple of things I can add that will really make this hurt, so.
Yeah.
So that's where I went. But spoiler alert, obviously.
Because it was really important, because it's so easy to kind of, not seeing it from his point of view, and not seeing it from Tamlin's point of view in general, it's very easy to disregard their feelings and to disregard the traumas that they were going through, which means that all the heroicism, all of the, you know, the feelings are all placed on the female character, in this case, Em, or Janet, in which case it feels like, well, why is she saving this useless human being.
Yeah, why did she pick him? She's clearly really competent, you know?
Yeah. And actually, I have a problem with that because it's so often done the other way around.
Yeah.
Where you have the female who needs saving and the male. And I just feel like it's really, really lazy to just... To make one part of the couple a non-entity. And also, I care so much more about Janet's struggle or Emmeline's struggle because I know that it's not one-sided. I know that there's something happening on the other side of it as well, and that the power of their affection for one another is binding them and pulling them together despite this humongous supernatural force. And that's actually ultimately for me why Janet was able to save Tamlin and why Emmeline was able to save Kieran, because when things go a bit wild and Kieran still doesn't know what the hell is going on because he's still Connell, Emmeline tells him to do stuff and Kieran goes, okay! I don't know who you are, I don't know what's going on, but I trust you.
Yeah, you're right. And obviously he does do that. And even then, even up until that moment, it's a hell of a job trying to get away from Clayna. She does not want to let go at all.
No, she really, really doesn't. To be honest, she also has a kind of a fair reason to do it as well.
Yes. Yeah, there is an element of that.
Yeah.
And So yeah, as you said, I think the thing with Tamlin is that you could say that the whole Fairy Queen, the supernatural thing, is basically a big metaphor for a really big inexplicable event happening. So you've got two people who are in love with each other and something terrible happens. And,
Yeah. You
know, it might not be anybody's fault, but it's something that they've both got to sort out together.
And
as we've said with Tamlin, you know, Tamlin kind of doesn't, he says, oh yeah, could you do this for me please, Janet? And we don't really know what he's up to in the meantime, whether he literally can't do anything or whether, as you say, he's kind of like, yeah, Janet, I'll take care of that, which is not a great basis for relationships. So obviously with Betwixt and Between, I went in a slightly different direction with it. And in some ways, Kieran's struggle is as strong or as challenging as M's is, just in a completely different way.
Yeah, it's a very different kind of struggle. And I liked that because it was a kind of a parallel between the physical and the mental struggle that they were going through. And it caused some tension between them and some rather sad things happen. Emmeline gets quite brokenhearted a couple of times. Because you're not a good person.
I'm not a good person. You made me laugh. I sent it to Madeline because she's, you know, my awesome beta reader. And she sends me this message back saying, hey, so is that legend at the beginning true? And I'm like, well, you know, that's what I heard. And then I didn't hear anything from her at all for 5 hours. And then I get a little message and I'm like, how far have you read? She's like 2/3 of the way through the book. Have you actually moved since you last spoke to me?
No.
So there you go, guys. Find your ideal reader and, you know, write for them. It works.
Yeah, in which Jules will send me something and then I'll ask a question. She'll be like, oh, yeah, that's the... Wait, which bit of the book are you on? Oh, I finished it. What?
Which is always extraordinary coming from someone who says, yeah, I don't really read that much.
I don't. I'm really picky about books. And it just so happens that I love yours, so I will devour them.
Oh, thank you. I'm going to nag you more for yours, obviously, but it won't let you off the hook.
Yes, yes, yes. Right. I think we've come to the end of our episode.
We have.
Today, yeah. But before we go, it's obviously time for our drumroll Dissecting Dragons recommendation of the week. Now, this week, it's my recommendation, and I have recently read a book called The Wicker King by Kay Ankrum. And it's one of the most unique books that I've read this year, for sure. The style is very different. The illustrations that are included, the small anecdotes, the characters, I it's brilliant. I really, really like it. And to the best way to describe it, it's about the ultimate bromance, which definitely is then becomes a romance. And it's about these two friends. It's magic realism, but kind of stands on the border where you could either perceive it as magic or you could perceive it as mental health issues. And the basic premise is that you have these two boys, Jack and August, and Jack basically starts to have these very vivid hallucinations, and August is doing his best to take care of Jack and kind of gets pulled into this magical world that Jack is now a part of and that Jack can now see. And their relationship is very intense. And I really recommend it, guys. I really thoroughly do recommend it. It's something a bit different and it's something quite special. So
It's
that's The
definitely on my
Wicker King.
team. Sorry, carry on.
No, so, I was just gonna say, so that's The Wicker King by by Kay Ankrum.
Yeah, it's on my TBR and has been on my TBR for ages, actually. I really need to get on with that.
And on that note, guys, we'll say thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Yeah, thanks and goodbye.
Bye!
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note, no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.